kind of hard to follow Raphael after that one. He gave us so much good information, but we'll give it a try. In our first session, we talked about the divine blueprint for the home. In other words, what God intended from the very beginning for the home to be. And we went from there to the next evening, next session, is what man has done to God's blueprint for the home. And, of course, when we were talking about that, we were talking about how man has made a mess out of what God always intended the home to be. And when we talked about that, obviously we were talking about marriage. And we talked about various aspects of it, people who just decide to cohabitate rather than be married, recognizing common law, and just simply looking at it as, well, this is just a piece of paper. That marriage license really doesn't mean anything. Of course, we kind of did our best we could to debunk that, shoot that down. So what we want to do tonight is in this series, the home as God would have it, is to look at the home and the husband-wife relationship. We talked about the fact that God made man first. We find that in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 7, and Paul reiterates that idea in 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 13. And therefore, in a very realistic way, in a very real sense, it's the home, the marriage, is patriarchal in its nature. God made the woman from man, took the rib from Adam and made Eve. And really, when you look at it, in reality, God made the woman for man, because it was Adam who did not find a adequate, proper helpmate to live with in this world. All he had were the animals, and that's what caused God to cause a great deep sleep to come upon Adam, and then take that rib and make Eve. And of course, that's where we find the pronouncement, Genesis chapter 2, verse 23. This is now bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was made from man. And we look at 1 Corinthians 11, verses 8 through 9 as well, where Paul would write these words, "For the man is not from the woman, but the woman from the man, nor was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man." Now, it is important for us to understand here, and we'll talk more about this in just a moment, but I think it's important for us to understand that when Paul wrote this, he wasn't saying that that the woman was of lesser value, just different role that the woman plays in a marriage. We look at places like 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 2, and we learn that the home was designed to be monogamous in its nature. Unfortunately, we went through an era back in the late 60s, early 70s of this thing called free love. And we understand that anybody who went through that, lived through that, saw the repercussions of that, can fully understand how much damage that really did to our society. I mean, not just from the standpoint of biblical things, spiritual things, but even our society began to break down because of that. It's like the old, I think there's a song, if you can't be with the one you love, be with the, or love, the one you're with, love the one you're with. And it's actually a song and with that in it, and it was the mentality. And yet that was never God's intention. We can go over to places like we'll just start with Matthew 19, 1 through 9. And we learn that ideal situation is that it's one man for one with one woman for lifetime, understanding that there are two exceptions, death and infidelity. But above the physical, the home should be the foundation of the family from a religious and spiritual perspective. We find that in Deuteronomy chapter 6. Verses 4 through 6. We're going to quickly look in the book of Ephesians, and we're going to do this backwards to how it is in the book of Ephesians. We want to first talk about, beginning in verse 25, going through the end of the chapter, we want to talk about the responsibility of the husband in the marriage relationship, in this home that has been formed by this marriage relationship. And let's just go ahead and read verses 25 through 33, and then we'll kind of dissect it just a little bit. He says, "Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church. For we are members of his body and of his flesh and of his bones. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. Now this is a great mystery. I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects or reverences her husband." Now, when we look at this, we've already talked about this in previous two lessons, but when you look at the marriage and the home situation, it should be like almost a mirror image of the church, of Christ in the church, because Christ is the head of the church, and the church is the bride of Christ. And you have, as we've talked about, the man is the head of that household, and he has a wife or a bride. So they almost like they should be very similar in mirror image to one another. And so when we see here that Paul says that a husband is to love his wife, he begins to go right into the idea of Christ and the church. And when he says in verse 26, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, has nothing to do with the actual marriage bond. In fact, when we get down to verse 32, this is a great mystery that I speak concerning Christ and the church. So we see this bond. We see that a husband is to love his wife. The husband is to, in a very real sense, I think, honor his wife. In other words, as husbands, men, we need to understand that what we have in a marriage relationship, in that bond, in that woman that you choose to marry, you should be lifting her up and presenting her as something special as far as in the eyes of man. People should be able to see that. He is to provide for her. He has a job of protecting his wife. And I think the meaning or the gist behind the idea that we have in Matthew 15:4, where Jesus said, "For God commanded you, saying, honor your father and mother." That word honor there carries with it to take care of, to protect, to lend your support to. And of course we understand that God made man and woman differently, one from another. It was perfectly designed that way. That's true mentally, it's true emotionally, it's true physically. But that doesn't mean, as we pointed out, that she is inferior in any way. Again, it simply means that women are different from men and men are different from women. They have different roles within the marriage. It was never designed for the woman to be the head of the house. And I'm talking about not just physically, but more importantly, spiritually. The man is supposed to be the one who takes the lead spiritually and direct that household. And right now, we're talking just about the man and the wife. We're not talking about children. That'll be in our last lesson. about when children become part of or introduced into the family. Notice what Peter would write to us in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7. 1 Peter 3 and verse 7. If I can ever get there myself, I will. And we'll read that. And remember what this is all on the heels of. Now, maybe we ought to just back up just a little bit and start. Back in verse 1, in fact, wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands. We'll talk more about this in just a minute. But this is the background, the context, that even if some do not obey the word, they without the word may be won by the conduct of their wives. In other words, even if you are married to a non-believer, by your good conduct, you might bring that person or help bring that person to Christ, into a right relationship with God. But then we notice here, verse 5, "For in this manner, in former times, holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord." And no, men, that doesn't mean your wife has to call you Lord. Okay, why not? Did I hear that?
I do.
Huh?
I call him Lord.
Oh, my. Well, okay.
I do.
Okay. But no, you don't have to, okay. Whose daughters you are, if you do good and are not afraid with any terror. Now notice, husbands likewise dwell with them in understanding, giving honor. There it is where we were talking about. We give honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. Now let's just stop for a moment there and notice what Peter is writing here. What he's saying: husbands, dwell with your wife in understanding. That doesn't just mean to come home in the evening and say, get my dinner ready and all this kind of stuff. Well, I've had kind of a bad day. I don't want to hear about your day. You know, I had my own day to deal with. He's saying dwell with him in understanding. We need to, as men, I know it's certainly true with me, you have to kind of dig down a little bit deep, because men's emotions are so much different than women, to come to a point where you can look at your wife and she comes in the door or you meet her somewhere and she's got a face that looks like she's just been beat down that day. Don't just jump in and say, "Well, you know, I had a great day. I hope you did too." Deal with them in understanding. Realize that they have had a bad day or whatever. We're to give honor. We've already talked about that to the wife. As to the weaker vessel, again, doesn't mean that they are inferior in any shape, form, or fashion. Just different than we are. And as being heirs together of the grace of life. Now, here's the part that I really want to focus on. That your prayers may not be hindered. Man, do you realize that our prayers can be hindered if we don't take this passage seriously? Do we realize that if we don't dwell with our wives in understanding, if we don't honor them as they deserve to be honored, if we look upon them and not as the weaker vessel, and the idea of being of heirs together of the grace of life, that our own prayers can be hindered by the way we treat our wives. That your prayers may not be hindered, it says. And of course, we notice verse 8, "Finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another, love as brothers, and be tenderhearted, as well as being courteous." So we look at that, and I think we get a picture here, men, of what we, at least in general, how we are supposed to deal with our wives, treat our wives, love our wives. Now, here are just a few suggestions. This is by far and away not a comprehensive list. Okay. Suggestions to husbands to continue in that happy and harmonious marriage, keeping that home together. Remember your attentiveness when you were dating and when you were first married. You know, I'm going to be honest with you, it's easy if we're not careful, if we're not diligent, to approach things from the standpoint of, well, you know, that was back then, you know, all this, you know, do I really have to hold hands with my wife in public and or something like that? You know, remember how you treated her when you first came to know her. Remember what it was like when you were first married. It doesn't hurt, by the way, guys, to remind your wife that you love her. You care about her. You are actually interested in how her day might have gone. Because guess what? She has a life that may be just totally opposite yours that day. You may have had the greatest day since sliced bread was invented. But she may have had a rotten day if she's at home with the kids. Ooh, man, I'll tell you what, you ever stay with a couple of kids, I'm too old for that now. But, you know, I'm telling you, a kid can run a mom ragged. Or if she's working outside the home, that's fine. But remember that she might not have had a good day. She might have had somebody come in, especially if you're in a retail situation or something like that. Somebody come in that was just in a bad mood. And treated her disrespectfully and made her feel bad. And man, now, on top of that, her boss got mad at her for something. May not even been her fault. You know, remember the opposite side of the picture. Number two, keep yourself, believe it or not, men, keep yourself attractive to your wife. She shouldn't all the time see you just as slouchy as you can possibly be. I was today. Went up to see her for a few minutes, and I told her I was bringing my slouchy self to her. But she shouldn't have to see that all the time, you know. Compliment your wife and show appreciation for all the things that she brings to a marriage. That's another thing easy to forget the longer in marriage you go. You kind of start taking things for granted. You know I've done it before, and I'm surprised my wife didn't give me an amen on that. All right. Confide in her. Put your complete trust in her as your best friend. Now, you may have a best friend somewhere else. You know, you have a buddy that you go to the gym with, or you have a buddy you like to go fish with, or whatever the case may be. On a creeper, under a car, talking, working on a car, whatever that may be. But remember, she really is supposed to be your best friend in the world. You chose to marry this person and to share a life with them. Share some time together. It's not always about you. I know most men don't want to go to Hobby Lobby. For one thing, when you get there, you think that time's going to end before you ever get out. But guess what? It's not going to kill you. It really won't. Be both the physical, and we talked about this a moment ago, the physical leader.
On that point, brother.
Yes.
Know, they like to watch romantic movies. I like to watch, action movies, and sometimes you need to watch one.
That's a really good point. You know, a lot of women do like to watch the Hallmark Channel and stuff like that.
I said yelp.
Oh, okay, yep. Okay, and honestly, some of those things, I think they write one script and just change people. You know, personally, that's me, you know. They change the town that they're in. They change the actor and the actress, and but it's the same script all the way through. After about the 20th one you've seen, you're going, I can mouth this word for word. But that's okay. You know, it's not always about you. Sometimes she's going to sit down and watch a movie that you want to watch, or go to sleep during it, whichever. I know I do that with something. But be that physical and spiritual leader also in the family. Unfortunately, this is the part that I think feminists have rebelled against and have hurt. It's this mindset that of total equality on every level that I think the feminists have messed up our country in the way that we think, because it was never God's plan for it to be like that. it is unfortunate because it is just as much a part of God's divine plan for the home as the husband's role. Of the mindset that you are attentive to the needs, attend to the needs of your wife. I would say also it's unfortunate because rebellion against God's will is sinful. And if unrepented of, that sin's going to cost us our soul in eternity. And this comes to the part that we want to talk about, the wives. This is the other aspect of Ephesians chapter 5. Wives are to be in subjection, in submission to their husbands. Now see, here's where again where I think the feminist movement has really hurt our country. It doesn't mean that you should be mistreated or looked down upon in a work setting. I've always maintained that if a woman can actually do the work, she ought to get paid equally to what the man makes. Okay, I have no problem with that. But unfortunately, I think the feminist movement have taken this too far. And in fact, in many cases, the feminist movement basically says you aren't in submission to anybody. And if you can't be in submission to your husband, you can't be in submission to God. That's for sure. So wives are to be in subjection, in submission to their husbands. Ephesians 5:22 through 24 says, wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands. By the way, did you hear that own part? That doesn't mean you submit yourself to anybody else. That's your husband that you're submitting yourself to. As to the Lord, and I think that's a key part too. Just as you would submit yourself to the Lord, to God, to Christ, submit yourself to your husband. That just as or even as means in the same manner and to the same degree. Just like you're going to submit to the Lord, you submit to your husband. He says, for the husband is the head of the wife, as also Christ is the head of the church. And he is the Savior of the body. And therefore, even as or just as the church is subject to Christ, so let wives be to their own husbands in everything. In everything? Think about this for a moment. I'm going to put a little proviso in here. I'm going to qualify this. The statement must be qualified with other biblical principles. And I'm going to chastise husbands here if you ever do something like this. But let's take for an instance here that the husband tells his wife, we won't get extreme, but let's just say hypothetically, and this isn't a hypothetical, I know some situations like this, that the husband tells his wife, no, you can no longer go to worship services on Sundays. No, nope, you're not allowed to go anymore. I'm tired of you being gone on Sunday mornings. I'm tired of you being gone on Sunday nights. And what's this deal with you being gone on Wednesday nights? You know, it's all it is Bible study. It's not important. You see, if a husband makes a demand on his wife that is unscriptural, in fact, I'll say sinful, then we have a higher principle, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Now I understand the context of Acts chapter 5. And Peter and John and the apostles were out preaching and teaching when they had been told not to preach and teach anymore in the name of Christ. But do you remember what their response was?
Mm-hmm.
We ought to obey God rather than man. There is a higher principle involved here. But if your husband does not make an unreasonable or a sinful request, let wives be in submission to their own husbands in all things. Yes.
Oh,
okay. So you were waving at me or something. Okay. Any demand that's placed upon a wife by her husband that is sinful has to be rejected in favor of doing the will of God. So you look at that, and here's the chastising part. Here to husbands, to be husbands or whatever. The time's going to come when you get married. Yes, Casey, you're going to get married one of these days. And you're going to have a Mrs. Katterhagen. And simply stated, never, ever, ever, husbands, ask your wife to do anything that would violate God's laws. You put her in a very untenable situation. You make it almost impossible. And I say this from the standpoint of, I know for a fact that there have been husbands who have made unscriptural, sinful demands upon their wife. One to the point was told she could no longer go to services, no longer take her kids to worship services, even to the point of hiding the car keys where she couldn't go anywhere. And surprise, surprise, he found her outside at the barn cranking up a tractor with her kids. She was going to come. I think that must have been a sobering thing for him to realize. And believe it or not, that man is now a member of the Lord's church. This goes back to by your good conduct. You just might bring this person, and he is a member of the Lord's church now. But it really went that far with them. So husbands, be sure that anything that you ask or make demands on your wife, that it is in accordance with the will of God, always. Titus chapter 2. Yes.
Quick comment?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Don't even ask. Just say, I have comments made.
I have a comment.
You go for it.
In 1 Peter 3:7, I think it fits right where you are speaking right now, where it says, as being heirs together of the grace of life.
Yes.
When a Christian marries a non-Christian, they can't be heirs together.
That is a good point.
And so, if you want to be heirs together, marry a faithful Christian.
Okay. I'm glad you put the word faithful in there. Mm-hmm. Because the truth of the matter is, we do need to be cautious about that. And this would certainly hold true whether you're male or female. You know, if you're looking at marrying somebody, is that person a faithful child of God? Not just somebody who warms a pew. Not just somebody a Christian in name only, so to speak. You know, just because somebody's been obedient to the gospel does not mean that they're living that life that Christ would have them live. And I think that's an excellent point. Yeah, if we want to be heirs together of the grace of life, that means we have to marry somebody who is a faithful child of God. If they are not, your point is well made. You really can't be heirs together. So, husbands, wives, whichever the case may be, you better get busy on converting that spouse.
Mm-hmm. And this is illustrated in Numbers chapter 36, verses 2 through 6, with the daughters of Zelophehad. And they could not obtain the inheritance unless they married within the tribe.
That's right. That's a good point.
So he said, as long as you marry within the tribe, because remember, the father had died, but he didn't have any sons.
Okay.
So, but they didn't want to lose their inheritance.
Their inheritance.
He said, okay, God told Moses, they can, I get their point, they need to marry within the tribe in order to keep the inheritance.
Okay. Very good point. That was Numbers what?
36, 2 through 6.
Okay. Numbers 36, 2 through 6. That is powerful. That tells you that the concept or the principle goes way back.
Right.
You know, now we don't have a tribe like they did then, but in a sense, you know, we deal with that from the standpoint of a Christian or non-Christian.
When you mentioned about, you know, being the leader,
mm-hmm.
and being a faithful Christian, you know, if he's sitting only in the pew or if he's pushing her down, that's not going to change just because they got married.
Correct.
In fact, you know, might settle stronger. Mm-hmm. And so that's something to consider before getting married. You know, people have hopes to change in them, but that, you know, marriage is not the place to do that. I mean, it's before.
But sometimes we find ourselves in that.
Yes.
I say we, people find themselves
correct.
In that because
yes.
maybe they weren't the kind of Christian they needed to be when they married this person.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but then that's where the the effort from the Christian has to kick in and say, okay, I know I've got an uphill battle. Mm-hmm. I have a cousin who married a non-Christian, and it took many years for him to become a child of God. But now he's about as solid as you're going to get. A hard studying man, took 2 years out of his life to go to Southwest School of Bible Studies, not with the intention of preaching, just simply to grow in God's Word. And so yeah, that's exactly right. If you marry somebody who's non-Christian, if you think they're pulling you down now, wait until you're married. It's probably going to get worse, isn't it? It's going to be more difficult to do that. Not saying it's impossible, but boy, does it get more challenging? Yes.
And you know, just to add to that too, we always want the happy ending.
Sure.
We always want it to work out the best way possible, and it sometimes just does not. And yet, what God commands for as your role and responsibility in the marriage doesn't change just because your spouse or who you marry doesn't do their part.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So when we look at these, we always give a happy ending for the most part. But even if it's not happy, even if your spouse doesn't live faith, even if they turn away, they were faithful at one point and they turn away, you still have to remain faithful to your spouse as God has commanded.
Exactly right. Simply because they're not living Christian life doesn't give you a get out of jail free type of card. You know, okay, this isn't working out, so I can dissolve this marriage. You can't find that one anywhere in the Scriptures. Again, they have two reasons and only two reasons, and we need to remember that. Just as a personal antidote, I'll throw at you here. Talking about husbands and wives and the relationships and all that we have, when I was, Tony and I were dating, need to understand that my dad, had been obedient to the gospel and had left the faith. Very, very sad situation all the way around on that, but he did have the mindset that said, basically, and I was his son. He said, if you ever mistreat her, if you ever treat her anything other than honorably and as your wife, you're going to have to deal with me. And I think my dad meant it. I think, you know, when he said that, he probably beat the stuffings out of me, you know, type of thing. You still have that responsibility, even though one may be pulling the other one down. You have a responsibility regardless of the circumstances. So, be what you're supposed to be, husbands and wives. Anything else before we move on? Okay. Titus chapter 2, 4 and 5. We learn that the older women have a responsibility to do what? Teach the younger wives. Teach them what? To love their husbands and their children. Now listen. To be discreet. Teaching them to be discreet. Younger wives, be chaste. How to be homemakers. How to be good. How to be obedient to their own husbands. Now listen, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. Do we realize, wives, and I would say especially younger wives, do we understand that when you are not what God expects you to be in that marriage relationship, it brings reproach upon God and His Word, because you're supposed to be Christians. You're supposed to be example to the rest of the women around you, whoever comes in contact with you. And I understand that the principle would hold true for a man, but we've already dealt with men and what they're supposed to be and what they're not supposed to be doing in that marriage relationship. But teach them how to do that. So I think that's an important part there. again, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. Now, let's back up, and I told you I was going to get to this one here in just a little bit. I hope I'm not going too fast. We still got enough, plenty of time for this. But as we continue to look at this, notice 1 Peter chapter 3, 1 through 6. Because Peter deals with wives here. Wives, likewise. And really, you back that up a little bit, and you can see where the likewise comes into play. But he says, wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they, without a word, may be won by the conduct of their wives. We've talked about that. When they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. That is the idea of reverence and respect. It says, do not let your adornment be merely outward. That is the arranging of the hair, the wearing of gold, or putting on fine apparel. Now, let's stop here for a minute. Now, does that mean, ladies, that you can't wear something that's appealing and looks nice on you, and you can't wear anything like, it says the wearing of gold. You can't wear gold earrings? No, that's not what it's talking about. It doesn't mean the idea of you can't, why you're just supposed to look so homely that your husband, you know, almost takes a back seat and runs. You know, that's not what he's talking about at all. Rather, the idea here is don't let that be your priority. Don't let that be. What are you supposed to be? Verse 4, rather let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. Boy, that's powerful, isn't it? That inward self. And again, doesn't mean, ladies, that you should not be physically or desire to be physically appealing to your husband. Not at all what that's talking about. Just don't let that be the primary thing, because what he's going to see is your inward beauty. I can almost guarantee you that anybody at the point where they are now, they look in a young man, a young woman, are looking at each other. I promise you that the man in this relationship, or the young man in this relationship, isn't looking at her thinking, boy, you are just not very attractive at all. No, you know what they do? You see beauty in that person. And you know what? You're going to see beauty in that person down the line, even when they first get out of bed and their hair's going every which direction, no makeup on, you're still going to see beauty in that person. So he says, don't let that outward thing be what drives you and guides you. Let it be that inward part, that hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty. Beauty of what? Of gentle and quiet spirit. Have that spirit about you, ladies, that is gentle and quiet. And that doesn't mean you can't talk, but let that be what's really driving that relationship. And notice again what it says, which is very precious in the sight of God. You know, when it's all said and done, I don't know what kind of body we're going to have. Don't know what we're going to look like in the end analysis whenever the Lord returns and He delivers up the kingdom to the Father. I mean, we had neither John nor Paul, either one, understood exactly what that body was going to look like. But I can assure you it's going to be the inner person rather than the outer person. Unless, of course, you think you're going to come back to this earth and walk on this earth like some people are teaching today, which certainly is not true. But notice again in verse 5, we continue on. For in this manner, in former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands. And this is where I got myself in trouble a while ago. As Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are if you do good and are not afraid with any terror. It's a powerful thing for us to understand that you can look back in Old Testament times and you can see how women of old adorned themselves in submission, in subjection to their husband. And again, I'm going to emphasize that. I think it's really important for us to emphasize this. Husbands, just because she is supposed to be in subjection to you, in submission to you, does not mean you mistreat her. It does not mean that you, as the expression goes, you lord it over her. That's not at all what's under consideration. In fact, when you look at the marriage bond, it is as near perfect as you can get from the idea of 100%, 100%. It's what it takes. I've always heard, you can't say that marriage is 50% each, because if you only give 50%, it ain't gonna work. It's 100% and 100%. So, men, don't think that you have this, club over your wife. Yes, sir.
You made me think about something that I haven't considered saying it this way, but marriage, according to this, two people racing as fast as they can to the humility line.
That's a good point. That's a good thought.
Because they're humbling themselves to one another. And it's every day you have to do that. Every single day.
Yeah.
Whether you're in a good mood or not.
That's a good point. That's the hard time when you're not. That's when it's hard to do. We have to check ourselves, isn't it? You really are, we really are rushing toward or working our way toward a life of humility. And when you have that life of humility, you're going to treat each other right. And by the way, add to that, when you are living as God would have you live, living that Christian life as a Christian home, you're going to have that relationship one with another. I think you would quickly find yourself out of step. It wouldn't take you long to figure out if you really are striving to live as God would have you live. Hey, I'm out of step with this. I haven't been treating my wife right. Or I'm out of step with this. I haven't been treating my husband properly. So, and I have just four quick suggestions for wives, to keep the marriage fresh and harmonious. And again, you know, I'm kind of hesitant on this first one. Let's not go to the point of necessarily the physical aspect, but the mental aspect. Make the home a place of peace. You know, okay, you've got so much going on in the world around you. And if you came home, husbands, if you came home in a bad mood, or wife, if you came home in a bad mood, leave it at the door. Leave it at the door. Make your home a place of peace. Make it a sanctuary from the problems of the world. You know, let's push all this back. Okay, had a bad day, but my husband's coming home, or we're meeting each other as we drive up from our respective jobs. Okay, I had a bad day, but it's not a bad day anymore. That's done with. Number two, keep yourself attractive for your husband. There's nothing wrong with that. Again, it's not the most important thing, I don't think. But I promise you, from a male standpoint, I can promise you, your husband will appreciate that. I see people back there murmuring at each other, like, okay.
He keeps telling me to listen.
Oh. Oh, wow.
Hey, Robbie, I went like that.
Yeah, he did that, right? Yeah. I'm listening. Okay. Okay. Here's something that I think probably we could apply to both, but learn to deal with financial matters wisely. So many things can destroy a home from the finance standpoint. People don't, I expected him to make a lot more money than he did. You know, and I'm kind of like Raphael was a while ago. You know, you if you can afford four, well, just portion it out four. You know, well, in a sense, that's what you kind of have to do sometimes. If all you have is this much money coming in, then that's what you make work for you. You know, don't go out and if I don't know if I've got a good analogy here. I'll try, because I think I know what some of this is. Don't think that you have to wear Mary Kay, and I think that's a pretty expensive thing, if L'Oreal will work. Is that a good one? Is that a good analogy? you know, from a women's standpoint. I'm trying to get some information from a wives and ladies out here. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, that's a good parallel. In other words, it doesn't always have to be the top end of something. Make financial matters wiser. Yes.
There was a man in one class that was teaching on the family, and he just couldn't take it anymore. And he raised his hand and said, "Oh, I don't know what to do. My wife just spends a lot of money." And, you know, it was kind of a confession he was making.
Yeah.
About.
Yeah, and that can create a problem. And I guess I probably should have thrown the men into that, because sometimes, you know, the old expression that the difference between a man and a boy is the cost of his toys, you know, and that can really be true, you know, regardless if it's cars or what it is, you know, there could be there. We need to be wise with our financial matters, and I really wanted to kind of kick Brother Stubblefield when he was here, and he was making the comments about. You know, let your wife spend all the money she wants to on makeup, you know. I'm going, whoa, 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 whoa. You know, don't say that like that. And take, women, take time out of your life for just you and your husband, you know. And this will really come into play next week when we talk about when children are introduced into the home, because sometimes that can crowd everything out. They do stuff now that I don't guess we even thought about when we were married, and that is date nights after you're married. I don't think that, you know, once in a blue moon, I mean once in a blue moon, we'd get somebody to babysit for our kids. But usually it was a special occasion, not just a, quote, date night. Well, the more I look at these and I see my own children doing these type of things, and I hear about other couples doing those types of things, that's a good idea. That really is a great idea. Just for you and your husband or you and your wife, give yourself some time together. Any other comments or thought? I've got through that faster than I thought I would, and it's almost precisely on time, but yes.
What you can't do is be selfish.
Okay.
You cannot be selfish and have a successful marriage.
Okay. That's, you know, when you stop and think about what I've been talking about, I could have made this a real short lesson tonight, and just don't be selfish, men. Ladies, don't be selfish, you know. But that is true. You know, you cannot be selfish. It cannot be self-centered. Marriage is not about one person. It's about two that became one flesh. In the beginning, that's the way God intended it to be. You're no longer this person. You are now a home based upon God's word. And so that's an important aspect of it. You can't be selfish. Anybody else? Okay. I'm just about as close to being on time as I can be, so I'm going to shut up.